The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart.
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.
Let's go! After last night's game where we saw the Warriors, who were heavy underdogs, take the Lakers to the brink without Klay Thompson, while LeBron and Anthony Davis were on the court, LeBron's epic three secured. That shot really was ridiculous. Securing the seventh seed for the Lakers in first-round matchup versus the Suns. Big Perk is back. All right, I will start with, you here, Stephen A. Are you feeling better or worse about the Lakers repeating?
Worse. I didn't think that LeBron looked the same in the first half. I saw Anthony Davis struggling. I questioned their durability. I questioned their three-point shooting outside of Kentavious Caldwell-Pope. And I questioned their free throw shooting, particularly because the ball is in LeBron James' hands and he's a 73% career shooter. And I think that when you're going up against some of these teams, that's one of the problems they don't have. They make perimeter shots and they hit free throws. And I think that that's the kind of thing you have to be concerned about, particularly with the road that the Lakers have to travel. Having to probably go on the road for each series against relatively physical teams, but physical teams that actually have perimeter shooters. That's my concern, and that's what I'm worried about with them.
I feel exactly the same as I did before the game. I don't think they beat a Nets big three, but I think they can get out of the West. What was obvious, like, here are the questions going in. Are they going to miss Rondo, right? Because just because you're a guy like Schroeder who can perform in the regular season, can you be Rondo in the playoffs? The answer was no. Schroeder's okay. He was just a guy last night. Rondo's not just a guy in the playoffs. He's an all-star. That gives them a big three last year. They don't have that this year. On the other hand, the operative word being big, the Lakers have a lot of size with guys who can play. The addition of Andre Drummond, when you have Drummond and AD and LeBron on the court, you're just going to dominate the boards. You're going to get extra possessions. And we saw it last night. Lakers should have been blown out, really, in terms of shots they were missing and the way they were playing. But they were able to dominate on the glass and on the defensive end. And I think now, AD not hitting shots. LeBron can hit big shots. AD from the outside can do it. But last year was not typical of his career. He normally does not shoot as well from the outside as he did last year. I don't expect him to this year. He can just do his normal thing. We saw Wes Matthews come in off the bench and be a real 3-and-D veteran guy who helped change the game. The Lakers have enough to beat the Suns, to beat the Jazz, maybe even the Clippers. I think those are all tough series. I don't think they have enough shooting, Stephen A., to beat the Nets. But that's the only team I think they simply don't have enough to beat.
Well, I actually feel better about the game from last night, about the Lakers and the way that they played last night. And here's why. I mean, they played horrible offensively, but they still got the win. And second of all, they're not going to go against a Steph Curry every single night. Nobody in the league is playing like Steph Curry. He's the toughest player in the league to guard. I don't care what you say about Kevin Durant, James Harden, Kyrie Irving, anybody, Giannis, you can name them all, Jason Tatum. Right now, Steph Curry is the hardest person to guard in the NBA. The way he moves without the basketball, the way that you have to trap him, the way that he's able to get to the basket, split double teams. I mean, he's just a magician right now, and this is why I say he's the best player in the league. That's one thing. They're not going to play against him. Second thing, Max, listen. Draymond Green guards Anthony Davis better than anyone I've ever saw, right, and ever seen. When I was with the Pelicans and we went up against the Golden State Warriors, I watched Draymond Green give Anthony Davis fits. Anthony Davis is not going to see Draymond Green anymore. He's going to see other bigs that he's going to dominate like he did last year in the bubble. Dennis Schroeder, Stephen A., on Stephen A. Sports Center, you remember I called him out. I said he wanted $100 million. It was his time to step up and show it. I still stand by that. But then I give him somewhat of a pass for last night because he is coming out of the COVID situation, right? And a lot of players have said that it's taking them a minute. They don't know. Some days they feel good. Some days they feel like they have a headache or a concussion or whatever the case may be. They have different symptoms, and they don't – like Jason Tatum said, it took a month for him to get back to where he originally was feeling great, right? But the Lakers' defense was so on point last night in the second half. It was a beautiful thing to watch. Playing boxes and elbows, helping the helper, taking away driving gaps, getting deflections. You know what happens when your shots are not falling? Then you force turnovers and get out in transition. That's what the Lakers done last night. So when I look at the Lakers defense, I'm looking at a guy like Alex Caruso who came in and who was being a pest to Steph Curry, right down the stretch. You look at a guy like Wes Matthews. The Lakers have so much depth that they could go to different guys, and Frank Vogel could search out different guys to plug in the rotation to give them life. Kyle Kuzma actually played well on the defensive end last night. So the Lakers' defense is just so good that the nights that they are struggling offensively, they're going to win games because of their defense.
Well, I agree with you about their defense, but I will say this. Last night is not exactly the ideal litmus test per se, because the Golden State Warriors are obviously shorthanded without Klay Thompson. When you go up against the Phoenix, when you got Devin Booker and Chris Paul to deal with, along with DeAndre Ayton, who has been getting better and better, and you and I were talking after the Sports Center with Stephen A. show last night, KP, and you saw what our man Michael Wilbon was telling us about what was going on in Phoenix. So you got that going on. You see the Utah Jazz, and you see the way they can shoot the ball. Plus, they have size. Plus, they have an elite defensive team as well. We can't ignore that. So when you pay attention to those kind of things, and then, of course, there is the Clippers, because we can say what we want, but there's still a threat. Kawhi Leonard is still there. Paul George is still there. Ty Lue knows what he's doing, and he knows LeBron James as well, because he went to three straight finals with LeBron James as his head coach and won a championship. So he'd have a clue. And plus, they picked up Rondo, who also knows and is also a brilliant cerebral point guard come postseason time. And so when you look at it from that perspective, I don't think that last night was the ideal litmus test to judge what we've seen from the Lakers, because they've got toughest competition down the road just based on bodies alone.
The other thing is, it's hard to get out of your mind that without LeBron James, AD just dominated Denver and then also Phoenix without LeBron James, and that was recently. So I'm not doubting AD's dominance, Perk. What I was addressing was what Stephen A. said about the shooting. AD was shooting from the outside throughout the playoffs last year at a level he's never hit from before.
No.
He was hitting outside shots last year unlike he normally does. That's what I'm saying. I don't expect that to be the case this year just because it had never been before. Unless he's one of those guys who could just elevate his shot in the clutch. There aren't that many of those guys, but maybe he's one of them. But unless that's the case, the Lakers are going to feel the fact that they don't shoot it particularly well as the playoffs go on.
Max, AD been knocking down mid-range jumpers since he came into the NBA, man. What are you talking about?
I mean from three.
Okay, he added that to his game. But when you say jump shots, you have to clarify what are you talking about, because Anthony Davis came into the NBA knocking down mid-range jump shots.
I'm talking about from outside. So from outside means three. No, it don't.
No, what are you talking about? When you say outside, that don't.
In today's NBA, outside is a jump shot.
Anything outside the paint.
In today's NBA, if you're talking about stretching, if you're talking about like a stretch four or five, you're talking about a guy who can hit from the perimeter, from three-point land. That's what AD was doing.
You're talking about people that can shoot outside the paint 15 to 17. We just had Chris Bosh on First Take the other day, who's inducted into the Hall of Fame. Max Kellerman, he was a specialist at the 15 to 17 foot jump shot,
I don't want to get bogged down on this. Let me be clear.
That's what we ask you to do.
Let me clarify.
Don't try to reinvent rules.
Let me clarify. AD last year was hitting from three, unlike he had previously in his career. He was taking them and he was hitting them. And Stephen A., when you say they don't have enough shooting, what I thought you meant was from outside, meaning the perimeter, meaning three-point land, because in modern NBA, we know that the way you convert from three is practically the same as a mid-range, which is why everyone takes threes, because you get an extra point. And if you don't do that enough, it's extremely hard to win. I think the Lakers have enough to compensate for that for the reasons you guys pointed out, the defense, the size, you know, everything else. But that will hurt them against the Nets, and it will make their navigation through the West harder.
By the way, Anthony Davis shot 33% from three-point range last year, Max.
Yeah.
The previous 2 years, he shot better from three-point range.
No, just so playoffs. You know. In the playoffs.
All right. I'm gonna wrap up this segment here by saying this really quickly. Just to be clear, stop me if I'm wrong, Max or Stephen A. Perk, you are the only one on this show picking the Lakers to repeat, correct?
Yeah, I am. I am.
Okay. We will leave it there. Hey, Molly Karam here, and thanks so much for listening to the First Take podcast. We all know breakfast is part of your day, but sometimes when you're traveling for business, you end up staying at a hotel that doesn't offer any, and you know what happens. You grab a cup of coffee, you skip the meal entirely. We've all been there. But if you book a room at La Quinta by Wyndham, you can enjoy their free Bright Side breakfast featuring delicious baked goods, fruit, eggs, yogurt, even waffles. And really, who doesn't want to start their day with a fresh hot waffle? Come on. Tonight, La Quinta, tomorrow, you shine. Book direct at LQ.com. Hey, I'm Molly Karam, and thanks so much for listening to the First Take podcast. Have you ridden an electric bike yet? Well, you need to check out Lectric e-bikes today, the number one selling e-bike in America. Two things stand out that bikers love about Lectric. Number one, the majority of their models come pre-assembled, so you don't need to be a bike savant to ride them. Number two, Lectric wants to empower riders to more exploring time outside on their bikes, so they've made range a priority. Long-range batteries allow riders to hit typically around 65 miles of range for up to 150 miles on some models. Bonus, Lectric has purposefully priced their bikes to be affordably awesome. So you don't have to break the bank to get these sweet rides. See why people who have made the switch to electric bikes have fallen in love with biking again by visiting lectricebikes.com. That's L-E-C-T-R-I-C ebikes.com. After 22 women accused him of varying degrees of sexual misconduct, embattled Texans quarterback Deshaun Watson seemingly broke his silence yesterday, posting video of him working out. We haven't heard from Watson since his last formal statement. That was back on March 16th. Max, what is your reaction to Deshaun Watson working out on Instagram?
Well, as you said, we haven't heard from him in a while. And I already know he's a great football player. Deshaun Watson is a great quarterback. He's one of the best quarterbacks in the league. So, okay, he's working out. You know, this is not a court of law where the standard of proof, the burden of proof, is on the person making the accusation. And the standard of proof is high, you know, beyond a reasonable doubt. This is really more about the court of public opinion. And if it was one woman or one or two or a handful even making an accusation, you would think, well, and he's claiming or his lawyer would claim, well, it's some sort of a conspiracy. You think, well, you know, like, let's see the facts come out. When there are 22 different women making a very similar claims about Deshaun Watson, then in the court of public opinion, that's what we're interested in hearing addressed, not the football of it. Because I find it hard to believe he's going to be able to get out on a football field this year for the NFL, in the NFL, if he doesn't address that. So he's working out? Tell me something I don't know. You're good at football. No, tell me something I don't know. Tell me some kind of a response to 22 women making virtually the same or a very similar accusation.
There's no disagreement here. Even though this is a debate show, this is not something that is debatable, to be quite honest with you. You're Deshaun Watson. I respectfully ask this question, and I say respectfully because he's innocent until proven guilty. These are allegations that have been levied against him. And that's all we know right now. Doesn't look good. Where there's smoke, there's fire, as some people would say. Walks like a duck, quacks like a duck, it ain't a mongoose. You got 22 different women accusing you of similar heinous acts. There's no question that's something that needs to be probed into and investigated and what have you. And he doesn't look very good right now. To know that's what's going on, to know that you have basically been unseen and to put out a workout video right now, I'm not going to lie, I don't think that was smart.
Yeah.
Because it gives the impression, that you don't really have any concerns. That's for your lawyer to handle. Well, that's not how it works when you have that amount of allegations levied against you. The reality is that the NFL, just based on the accusations alone and the rules stipulated in their collective bargaining agreement, Commissioner Roger Goodell, literally, without any kind of criminal indictments or anything leveled against Deshaun Watson, he could literally say, you ain't playing football until further notice in the National Football League, because you have impugned the shield with all of these accusations coming out. If we put you on the field for this upcoming 2021 NFL season, we will be excoriated. There's no way around this. We can't let you out on the field. And to know that that's your reality, because he knows that, and to put out a workout video, but we haven't seen a single press conference. We haven't even seen you walk in the streets with a camera in front of you and addressed any of these allegations that have been levied against you. I know your lawyer's probably advising you not to say anything, and I totally get that part. But because of the amount of allegations leveled against you, if you ain't going to say anything, don't say anything and don't be seen. Just go ahead and do what you got to do. But don't go out and give the impression that somebody else is handling this and you got your mindset on playing football when you know you play for a league and in a league that is overseen by a commissioner who can literally today, based on the allegations alone, go to the Players Association and go to you personally and say, here's your money, but you will now be on the commissioner's exempt list. You will not be playing football for the 2021 season. Roger Goodell could do that right now. And knowing that, and you still going to put out a video with you working out and getting yourself. I mean, I know he's going to work out, got to keep himself in shape because it's possible he could play and he's got to be ready. Please, I'm not saying he shouldn't be working out. I'm saying for that to be the public image that you've disseminated at a time like this, I don't know who advised him to do that, but it wasn't smart.
Yeah. Max, what you said was spot on. Stephen A., you as well. I will just add four words here as the female on the show. It feels tone deaf. That's what it feels to me.
Hey, hey, I'm Molly Karam, and thanks so much for listening to the First Take podcast. You can now stream the most MLB games on DirecTV without a satellite dish. Yes, catch the clutch hits, strikeouts, grand salamis, web gems with nothing on your roof. So whoever's up there, whether it's roofers, Santa, birds, old-time chimney sweepers, moody teenagers, thrill-seeking raccoons, you name it, they won't find a satellite dish, but you will find your MLB games on DirecTV. That means DirecTV is your home for baseball this season. Root, root, root with nothing on your roof. Yes, stream your team. Call 1-800-DIRECTV or visit DirecTV.com to sign up today. Claim based on the total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Thanks so much for listening to the First Take Pod. Have a fabulous day.
All right, with last night's loss to the Lakers, the Warriors will now have to regroup and face the young Grizzlies in a win or go home game tomorrow night. Monica McNutt, our basketball analyst extraordinaire, joining us. First time I've gotten to be on the show with you. Hello, lady. How are we doing today? Thank you for being with us.
I'm well, Molly. Hey, Max. I'm happy to be here. Thanks for having me.
Well, of course.
Good to be on with a rising star. Every time you read something about Monica, she is a rising star.
Yes. Great on TV. Great, great personality. No question. I've been watching you. I'm going to start with Max here, though. Max, how do you feel about the Warriors in this particular game against the Grizz?
I think they got their work cut out for them. You know, like everyone, when they looked at the Grizzlies and Spurs, was talking Ja Morant, but it was Valanciunas who was the real problem. And I think they have their work cut out for them. Steph Curry has been playing at a very high level. And I do think that when push comes to shove, he will be clearly the best player on the floor and will decide the outcome, and the Warriors will win. I think that Wiggins especially has shown that he can be a real two-way force, and Draymond Green was a beast defensively. But I don't see this as a gimme. I see this as a tough game for the Warriors.
Max, I actually agree that this is going to be a tough game, and I'm actually on the other side of this coin. I actually believe that the Grizzlies will be able to pull this one out tonight. I'm really, really excited to see one Dillon Brooks do his best job in terms of slowing down Steph Curry, who obviously is the supreme X factor in this narrative. But I really think, I agree with you, Valanciunas, 23-23 in the first play-in game. He's a guy that averages a double-double. He's averaging 19 and about 14 rebounds, I believe, against the Warriors in particular. I just think considering what happened to this Grizzlies unit last year and the youth, I know sometimes youth can be a double-edged sword, but I actually think in this instance, not only does the youth benefit them, but the fact that they just saw this team to finish out the regular season, I think we're going to see a different outcome than we did in the regular season. Mm.
Stephen A., where are you on this?
I'm going with Steph Curry. And I, at some point in time, John Morant can't, you know, he's got to step up. And when he's, I mean, he had 35 in a closeout game against Portland last year in the bubble. We know what he's capable of doing. I'm not taking anything away from him. And I, too, am a fan of Dillon Brooks. I like Dillon Brooks a lot. I like how he goes after it. I like how he competes. And he can play. And Valanciunas had 23 rebounds last night. Let's not forget that. 23 points, 23 rebounds. So he's a big who plays big. And that could be problematic for an undersized Golden State Warriors team. But I think that when the game is going to be in San Francisco, when you're talking about Steph being on his home turf, when you're talking about him being the shooter that he is and what he brings to the table, I think that potentially could be too much for the Grizzlies to overcome in this particular situation, especially with the way that they played last night, Golden State played last night. Remember, it wasn't good enough to beat the Lakers, but that would have been good enough to beat the Grizzlies.
Yeah, I mean, DeMar DeRozan was missing everything. And if that's Steph Curry taking those shots, those are going in. And they're going in from three. I think in the end, the best player on the floor determines series like this. And I think in this game, that's Steph Curry by a factor of something.
I'm not going to disagree with you guys on Steph being the best player, but I do have a slightly different perspective on the toll that both initial games took on both of these teams. I think the Warriors put out their best effort and came up short. I think that they have a tougher challenge in terms of bouncing back. Yes, it is at home in the Chase Center, than an upstart Grizzly squad who played terrific against the San Antonio Spurs. I just think momentum's on their side. It feels like if there was ever going to be a year where one of the younger teams kind of took one from an established superstar, feels like this is the moment to me.
That would be bad for Steph, guys. If they, like, you know, you would think that this is just a gravy year for Steph because, you know, the team has been really hurt by injury and anything he accomplishes is to his credit and whatever they come up short, it's not his fault and all that. But at this point, you push the Lakers to the brink. The Lakers are favored to get out of the West. They're favored against the number two Suns by a lot. Right, by the second-seeded Suns by a lot. And at this point, I actually think if that's the case, Monica, then Steph actually does have something to lose. I think it takes some luster off his season if he can't lead this team through the winner of the 9-10 game. I think that's actually bad for Steph.
Well, listen, I'll tell you this. Monica does give me cause to pause because she knows what she's talking about. And by the way, keep doing the great job that you've been doing, girl. I've been watching. Having said all of that, I'm still going to disagree with you respectfully on this particular one because I think that there's levels to this. And I think that when we look at the Memphis Grizzlies, you know, one of those teams that's just got talent and they're tough and they're going to scratch and they're going to fight and they're going to be there and they're not an easy out. But you know they're going down anyway. That's what the Grizzlies always give you the impression of when it really, really counts. It's like last year watching them in the bubble when they went up against Dame and the Blazers. I just said, I'm looking at them. Great game. It was a great game down to the wire. But somehow, somewhere, even with Ja Morant doing what he did, you just knew that Dame and CJ would find a way. Because it was Memphis that they were going against. And that's the kind of feeling that you have thinking about Memphis about to go up against Steph Curry and Golden State. And let's not forget Jordan Poole, who the Warriors are very, very high on. They're excited about his prospects and what he's going to bring to the table. Even when Klay Thompson comes back, the fact that you've got him in the mix, they're excited about him. Andrew Wiggins showed up last night. What if he does that again? What if he gives you another 21? What if he plays the exceptional defense that he's played? Who's that guy? Who's that closer? And just weeks ago, Monica, you know this. John Morant was in a game. I think it was against the Warriors, but I'm not sure. Where he was so disgusted with himself because they had backed off of him and dared him to shoot jump shots. Doris Burke was talking to me about that last night. So I think about that, and John Morant is electrifying, great athlete, finisher, got a lot of heart, reigning rookie of the year. But at some point in time, particularly in the playoffs, when defense is slow, they get back and they turn you into a half-court team, even though Memphis is accustomed to that. You got to be able to hit perimeter shots, especially against Steph Curry. And if you don't do that, it could cost you.
You're not wrong, Stephen A. And in fact, in that regular season game, Ja was 7 of 21. Whew. He definitely has to be able to hit shots. But I don't know, y'all. And this basketball analysis aside, I just think this Memphis team is young. They're gritty. They were in this spot last year. I love the way Jaren Jackson has returned to the floor. I think if he can hit shots throughout the course of the game against the Spurs, he was hot early and kind of went a little bit quiet. I just think that they're playing with house money. And I heard you guys discussing Brad Stevens' comments about the Celtics and the Nets matchup. To me, it's the same kind of deal, right? Like, internally, we know that this is a behemoth of a task. We fully understand what the Warriors represent and how hot Steph Curry has been. But I just feel like this could be the moment. I tell you what, in terms of a young team that could knock off a giant, I think this is it. I don't think we see it anywhere else in the playoffs.
All right, fair enough. We'll leave it on that note. Monica McNutt, great stuff as always. Thank you so much for being with us. Have a fabulous day.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code FIRSTTAKE and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to gamble responsibly. See BetMGM.com for terms. This U.S. promotional offer not available in D.C., Mississippi, North Carolina, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 for New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. For Massachusetts, 1-800-327-5050. For Iowa, 1-800-BETS-OFF. For Puerto Rico, 1-800-981-0023. For West Virginia, visit 1-800-GAMBLER.net. First bet offer for new customers only. Subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel.
If he's able to win three straight series on the road in the West and he's able to beat the Brooklyn Nets, we might have to have a real conversation about the GOAT. We might have to have that.
Stephen A., you got cut off there in that clip, so I need you to continue that conversation you were having with Sir Charles and Greeny there on Get Up, the GOAT conversation, that
well,
is.
Well, he, you know, it was partially my fault because I thought, I knew where he was going. Mm-hmm. So I really was like, you know, when he clarified himself and said it has to be a conversation. We have to have a conversation. I thought he was literally saying, we got to put LeBron there. I was like, what? You know, so my reaction just basically preceded his comments. But I get where Charles Barkley is coming from. And I was joking around with Max and Kendrick Perkins weeks ago when Kendrick Perkins looked at the camera like, don't you say it? Because I was like, we might have to think because I'm thinking about LeBron beating all of those folks. But the reality is that I've watched basketball. I haven't just covered basketball for more than the last quarter century. I've watched it practically all of my life. And when it comes to MJ compared to LeBron, I just think there's levels. And I think that a lot of times people are looking at numbers and stuff. Well, MJ played 3 years in college. LeBron never went to college. MJ played in an era that was far more physical than is allowed now. The Jordan rules that were implemented by the Bad Boy Pistons and stuff like that, LeBron didn't have to go through any of that. And, you know, even though I hate using the word choke because I don't feel that way about LeBron. I think he's number two all time. I think he's a phenomenal leader and a phenomenal player and all of that other stuff. But I can't escape what I saw happen against Dallas. That has never been on Michael Jordan's resume. I'm not even talking about a finals loss, which never happened. I'm talking about anybody saying such things. And then you take into account just the mental makeup. LeBron James, for so many years, playing around, ingratiating himself with folks, not really creating an environment of animus and vitriol where you're going at one another and everybody knows it and this is what it is, you know. And so I think about things like that in terms of the kind of mood and tempo you set in order to engage in competition. And that, to me, is what's missing. So when I think about MJ over LeBron, it's not just the titles. It's not just his unblemished record in the NBA Finals. It's the way he embraced challenges. And Max, I know I told you one story and you brought that up about, you know, MJ really setting the competition right. But there were other things, like somebody would say something and a reporter would go to MJ during a press conference and say, well, this player said this or whatever. And Jordan wouldn't say anything. And then he'd get up and he'd leave the press conference. And then he'd peek his head back into the media room with us. And they said, what? Who said that? You see what I'm saying? Just so we'd all know, like, who said that about me? Okay. You know what I'm saying? And then he'd leave, and you knew, and the headlines let you know, Jordan's coming for this dude. That's the kind of stuff that LeBron has never given us, and that's the kind of stuff that contributes to the allure that allows someone to be labeled the GOAT. And that's where I'm at with it.
See, to me, what your argument is like, look, this is the way I think about who the greatest is, and LeBron can't overtake Jordan. The problem for me is I think a lot of young people now think, oh, any old-timer who says MJ, they just grew up with him. They have this, like, irrational attachment to him. You know, if you idolize whoever you come up watching, and they almost have a religious devotion to him. What I mean by religious devotion is religion is, it means an undisprovable hypothesis. Meaning no matter what you say, you can't talk me out of this. I believe this. This is based in feeling and faith and emotion. Belief. That's not me with Jordan. I want to be very clear to people who support LeBron as the greatest player ever. No. I have a rational approach to this. And rationally, Michael Jordan's the greatest player who ever lived. Like, I'm sorry to hurt the feelings of kids who came up watching LeBron, because I know when your eyes are on LeBron, you're like, how could anyone ever have been better than this? There was a guy who was even better than this. His peak was better than this. Value over career, that's another story. LeBron's longevity can't be touched. But at their very best, Jordan's the greatest player of all time. Which is why I was glad when you said Stephen A. a couple weeks ago, and you did the whole thing, I don't know, if LeBron gets through the Western Conference and beats the big three on the Nets and they're healthy, we might have to have that conversation. The reason I was glad about that, even if you don't think that we have to have that conversation or change our minds, is because I do think we have to have that conversation. If LeBron goes, as Barkley said, on the road in the Western Conference as a play-in, beats the entire Western Conference, and then comes out of the West and faces a healthy Nets big three, let's say, who hasn't even been to a game seven yet, something like that, and LeBron beats them too? No, my ranking Jordan 1 is not some religious devotion to Jordan. It's rational. In other words, everybody, in fact, Jordan is the greatest player of all time. But if LeBron does that, then in fact, we better have a new conversation, because maybe LeBron will have caught him. We have to see how it unfolds. To me, it's evidence-based. And if LeBron produces that level of evidence, mm-hmm. New conversation.
As usual, I think your comment is uppity and bougie. Because who's to say that other people's position isn't about evidence? I don't believe this is some religious devotion to Jordan. I believe that I'm going on evidence. And I'm going on the eye test as well. It's not just numbers. It's not just championships. It's not just what I saw him do. It's who I saw him do it against. Those things are relevant to me. And so when I look at it from that perspective and I think about a LeBron and I think about the eye test, watching these guys perform, I also think about the conditions under which you perform. When I think about Jordan and how the Pistons were just so vicious and unapologetically so, And he had to not only overcome it himself as an individual, but he had to galvanize the troops around him to do so. Horace Grant was younger. You know, B.J. Armstrong and John Paxson and Steve Kerr and all of these other guys. I mean, I'm just so Greg Hodges initially anyway. Let's not forget him and what he meant to that franchise. The list just goes on and on. I pay attention to that. When I think about how he had to go through the Knicks when Pat Riley came up in there, and Pat Riley like, this ain't Showtime no more. So guess what? I'm going to inherit a Ken Bannister, and then I'm going to go out and get an Anthony Mason, and I'm going to get him to join Charles Oakley. I had a Xavier McDaniels before that with Patrick Ewing and found a John Starks and traded for a Rolando Blackman and got a Derek Harper and had a Greg Anthony and all of this stuff. I'm going to remember those kind of things. I'm going to remember what the league was like, how vicious it was, how violent it was, how it turned off the NBA so much that rules were implemented to make the game more attractive to the viewing eyes, not just nationally, but globally. I'm thinking about all of those things and how one year after another, as the game changed and supposedly the competition elevated, Jordan kept elevating. And by the way, the mentality that he had was at the very beginning. It wasn't something he developed after. He didn't have to sit across the table with Pat Riley showing him rings and Dwayne Wade saying, taking him on vacation and going like this, yo, man, I need,
you're the best
player in the world. But in order for us to be the best that we can be, I need to hand you the reins. Jordan didn't have to be told all
of
that.
I hear you.
I'm paying attention to all of those things.
Your criteria sounds subjective to me and sounds like it's trying to justify a conclusion you've already reached believe.
Hold on. So when do you say stuff that's not subjective?
When you say,
we're human beings,
I'm
we're
trying
all subjective.
To establish some kind of objective criteria, but we don't really have time for that. When you say uppity and bougie, I think you're mispronouncing authoritative and brilliant.
Max, when it comes to sports, the day I associate brilliance with you, I will retire.
Well, I'd like to keep you around. I hope that's not the case.
Of course,
it'll dawn
like
on you any moment now.
Of course, you'd like to keep me around because you want to win.
I'd like to ask the audience who has the biggest ego on this show. I think people might be surprised with the answer. All right, with last night's win, the Lakers, now the seventh seed, open as a substantial favorite to win the series. That, according to Caesars Sportsbook by William Hill, it's the first time in at least 30 years that a seventh seed is favored over a two seed in the Phoenix Suns. Max, should the Lakers have been such heavy favorites?
No, not 3-1 favorites. Minus 300 means you bet 100, you bet have to bet 300 to win 100.
Mm-hmm.
3-1 in the old days, right? No, they are not 3-1 favorites here. I agree they're favorites. And I think, as I said earlier, there's some recency bias here. We just saw the Lakers without LeBron beat the Suns behind AD. So then you figure out LeBron and AD. But the Suns are, listen, everyone talks about Chris Paul and he deserves a lot of credit. Suns were 8-0 in the bubble. So, you know, the whole question about Devin Booker, is he an empty calorie stat guy or is he a real? No, he showed you he was killing the game in wins. 8-0, before, you know, during the bubble. Stephen A., when we looked at the Suns on paper in the preseason, I was thinking the biggest question mark is the number one overall draft pick center who's already pretty good, DeAndre Ayton. Because they got forwards who don't need the ball, who can really 3-and-D, Mikal Bridges, Cam Johnson. They got Saric, who can be a playmaker. They got, add Jay Crowder. They got everything you need. And then in the backcourt, Chris Paul and Devin Booker. Those two dudes. I look at this matchup. I think there are going to be times in crunch time. LeBron's going to have to guard Devin Booker. Who else is going to? No, the Lakers should be slight favorites to beat the Suns.
I agree with that. I don't think they'd blow them out. When I pick the Lakers to win this series, I'm thinking 7 games because I think it could potentially come down to that. I respect the hell out of the Suns. I just think that, you know, there's a piece missing. I think they're a relatively young team when all is said and done. And as the way series progresses, palms will get sweaty, backsides will get tight, and somebody is going to mess up of that younger ilk. That's what I'm believing about the Phoenix Suns. So I'm not summarily dismissing them. I'm just saying they're good, but the Lakers obviously are better, not just because of LeBron, but because of their championship experience. And I think that's what this comes down to. I'm not trying to take anything away from them. I know in terms of Chris Paul has been sensational this year. We all know that. And that's why I'm tired of hearing about the bubble play. I don't believe that we can ignore the fact that last year's truncated season, in which the season was put to a stop, for 4.5 months before play resumed. I don't think we can put as much weight on their bubble play as we're giving it. We give them credit when it's due at the time that it was transpiring, because it said a lot that they went out there and went 8-0. But in the end, it's not like if they had come into this season with the same squad without Chris Paul, they would have won 50 win. They would have went 51-21. They would have battled for the top overall seed in the NBA in the Western Conference and end up finishing as the number two seed. It's not as if those things would have happened without Chris Paul. Just ask Monty Williams, the coach of the year voted by the coaches, the coach of the year voted by me. The man has done a sensational job, and it took a lot for me not to give Tibbs, Tom Thibodeau, the New York Knicks, the Coach of the Year award. But Monty Williams was just that exceptional, and it couldn't be ignored. Even he knows what kind of impact Chris Paul has had on this team, particularly these young players, and specifically DeAndre Ayton. Because he told DeAndre Ayton, we going to go against some big teams in the Western Conference. We can't beat them without you. And look at how DeAndre Ayton has developed over this season. Oh. So I don't take that for granted. I pay attention to it. I think it takes a Lakers team to take them out.
Yeah, I don't disagree with the Chris Paul thing. In fact, in the preseason, one of the reasons I like the Suns so much is the addition of Chris Paul. Like when Westbrook goes to the Wizards and he's going to be there with Bradley Beal, you know they're both big talents, but you got to wait and see how are they going to play together. Even Kyrie and James Harden, how are they going to fit together? Like on paper, maybe not. Let's see. And they worked it out. When they picked up Chris Paul and it's going to be Chris Paul and Devin Booker, I thought, oh, my God, that's on paper. That's perfect. And it worked out the way you thought it would. And one of the reasons I liked the Suns a lot in the preseason was the effect that Chris Paul was likely to have on DeAndre Ayton. I agree with all of that. Still, you like the Lakers here, at least I do, by a little bit. And partly that's because even if Ayton has been guided by Chris Paul, he's still young, hopefully, in his NBA career. If this was 2 years down the line, if this was a DeAndre Ayton from 2 years from now, I might feel differently. But it's not. He's still a little green. I like the Lakers.
Real quick, Max, you trust the Suns or Jazz more?
Actually, I trust the Suns more. And okay. What it boils down to is kind of the stupid sports guy thing here. The Jazz are a better overall team, all that stuff. When it comes down to it, the Jazz got one killer. That's Donovan Mitchell. The Suns got two, Chris Paul and Devin Booker, so I like them a little more.
Stephen, I need you.
I trust the Jazz a little bit more because I like their size, their defensive prowess, combined with the closer that is Donovan Mitchell, who's been knocking on the door the last couple of years.
Guys, Mets fans, rejoice. There was a Noah Syndergaard sighting yesterday, and his signature blonde locks pitched for the Mets in their first rehab outing since Tommy John surgery late last March. Look at this hair. Stephen A., in your opinion, who's got the best hair in sports?
The best hair in sports is Trevor Lawrence.
Okay.
That's the best hair, but I like Noah Syndergaard as well. I had the pleasure of meeting him one time. I really like him. Nice guy. And a hell of a pitcher before his injuries, and it's a shame with the Mets staff, because we looked at them one time, my goodness, their staff is just ridiculous, but injuries have ravaged them. But I like Noah Syndergaard, and the hairdo is cool, but Trevor Lawrence, that would be the number one. He's going to be the number one endorser of hair products.
Yeah, I think that's right for nowadays, but Stephen A., when we were growing up, who was the dude whose hair you knew immediately? Because that's my all-time pick, Oscar Gamble. Oscar Gamble's my all-time pick. And a hell of a platoon hitter, boy. Don't throw a righty against him. He'll kill you.
You
forgot
for
Dr. J's hairdo.
Yeah.
That's
about
true. Dr. J? J's
that afro.
I got one for you. Let me tell you a secret. If my husband had a choice between hanging out with me or seeing his barber, absolutely going to the barber. And let me tell you the commitment it takes to have waves. Stephen A., I don't know if you ever had them, but you really got to brush it out all day long to get to lay it down like that. So I will give
Jaden
know how to rock that.
I will give him a shout right there. Yeah, if he had a choice between that hairline or being married to me, I'd be gone real quick. Trust me. All right, everybody, have a fabulous day. We'll see you tomorrow.